Before we begin, everyone do me a favor.
Thanks.
Read a little thing I wrote called The Federalist Papers.
Yeah.
I explain how a nation's unlikely to survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I lost the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my faith to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash-trapped, I pushed past that. Now some sickle makes crypto, and our nation backtracks.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented Bitcoin because fiat is a disaster. A man from Japan or a damn hologram. I'm the reason open season on crypto began.
Does anybody
Come
know
to Tokens Radio Show. It's Sunday, March the 24th. My name's Christy.
I'm Linda.
I'm Elizabeth.
Lauren.
Peter.
Yes.
I don't think Peter's is working.
There we
Peter,
go.
Peter, are you working?
And we have a special guest here with Peter. He's come back to visit us this week. Welcome, Peter.
Thank you, Christy.
There it is.
Good to see you.
Yeah.
Good to have everybody in-house this today.
Great to be here.
Now, let me mention just a brief moment about Peter. You know, Peter, we met him, just came by the station, and he, you know, we got talking a little bit and invited him to come in and sit with us, and he's been a wealth of information. We appreciate having you here. Mm-hmm. Thank you for that.
Thank
indeed.
You.
Indeed, smart fella.
Yes, indeed.
Well, so before you go on, I was going to say, so we'll allow anybody to come in if you want to come join us. It's not a problem. Just stop on by like Peter did.
I'm the perfect example.
Yeah.
Yes,
but I'm
you.
The screener. So not everybody.
Oh, that's true. Got to get by Lauren.
Right.
Got to get by Lauren.
And he's really big.
Oh,
tall,
yes.
Big man.
Yep.
Yes.
I'll look you up on the internet and make sure you're legit.
There well, you
go.
May want to know where said radio station is. It's and we're broadcasting live from the studios of KCNR in Redding, California, on both 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. You can stream us online at kcnr1460.com to catch today's show and access our archive. Archive. That is just...
It's a big word.
Our past shows.
You got it. Yeah.
Archive. Okay.
It's usually me that does that.
Follow us on Telegram and X for updates at Tokens Radio Show. And we have Ben in the booth today who's going to manage the music and keep that button handy just in case something comes up. That shouldn't go on the air.
What's up, Ben?
We can't hear you.
We got voices in the background,
yes,
guys.
I think that's Ben.
Ben?
Okay.
Well, we can't hear you very well, Ben, but I think it's mic 5 that you have to
All right.
switch with.
You do your update.
Okay. So we've been talking a lot about Bitcoin mining lately, and we're going to take a slight divergence from that today, take a little bit of a break. And we'll talk a little bit about it possibly later, and we're going to mix it in with some interesting takes from X. But first, let's do a quick market update. Bitcoin's at 66,224. IBIT is at $36.41. Ethereum's at $3,400.
Wow.
My gosh. XRP is at 63 cents and XLM is at 13 cents.
That's crazy
stuff.
Today's show is sponsored by the Queen of Dragons, home to Pinnacle Cultivators. Their carefully cultivated, unique strands offer elevated experience with exotic genetics and robust flavors. The Queen of Dragons is known for fair pricing, stringent quality control, and knowledgeable staffs. Stay connected by following at Queen Dragons on X or calling 530-276-9771.
Well, I missed my cue. Sorry about that.
Like to join the conversation.
Yeah, if you'd like to join the conversation, give the station a call at 530-605-4567 or hit us up in the chat at kcnr1460.com. It would help if I followed my tabs here, right?
It's trying
to it happens.
Straight
Give us
out.
A call.
Well, you know, it just happens sometimes, especially when we're live. That's when
Lauren,
you get kinky.
Do you have a word on IBIT, what's going on with the ETFs?
You know what? I personally think that right now the ETFs are probably the biggest thing propelling Bitcoin right now. I keep an eye on IBIT. I own some IBIT and some other of the ETFs. I think the thing that's really shocking to me this week isn't necessarily the sideways action. There's been a lot of leverage being annihilated. But still, the biggest reason that we're not just booming is the bleed from GBTC. GBTC is actually at a point where they've almost lost half of their coins from when all of these things released. So they were over 600,000. They're around 350,000 right now and continuing to bleed. So I don't know if one day Barry Seibert's going to wake up and realize he may want to lower that 1.5% fee he's charging to manage this when he has nine other competitors that are doing it for
Lauren, they announced this past week they are absolutely going to lower. I think Michael Sonnenheim, the CEO, announced that.
They didn't officially announce it. They said they would consider it. They've also done something really ridiculous, which is announced they're going to actually put another ETF out there, which isn't actually an ETF, but it's just based upon pricing of coins. So they're not going to hold one-to-one. I'm not a big fan of GBTC, and I think that they're going to continue to crash and burn because I think a lot of other people see that they're full of it and they're not really
Smoking mirrors.
So I think we may still see a little bit of sideways action because though, you know, the ETFs that are legit are still, you know, pulling all a lot of that equity that's coming out of GBTC. So when the bleed from GBTC stops, and in combination with the halving, and who knows, like two or three, you know, another country adopts, there another Michael Saylor appears from the shadows. There's a lot of eventual things that could really just, you know, I mean, after the halving, what did I say, like 165,000 Bitcoin will be mined in an entire year? So that's crazy. The numbers are going to really start hitting a point where we're going to see a supply shock. So anyway, sorry, that's my two cents on ETFs for this week.
Thank you so much. You know, speaking of Michael Saylor, you know, let's wet our whistle with a little wisdom from the great Michael Saylor.
Let's do it. Yeah, we love Michael Saylor.
So why don't we go there with this? It's coming up. All right. Pardon me.
Give us just a second. Little technical problem here. You're not plugged in, are you?
No, I'm not.
I can hear Michael in my mind.
Well, you know, you probably can hear a lot of things in your mind, but anyway, give him.
But that's what the good doctor's here for.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. All right. Now I think we're good to go with Michael.
I don't have my button box today. So
my button box.
A technical solution.
There he is.
8 billion people property rights. If I can own $100 in my hand as easily as I can own $1 billion. And we've never had that in the history of the human race. Bitcoin lets you save your money in an asset that goes up in value, and it lets you move that asset at the speed of light all around the planet. And what the president of El Salvador realized is, using the Bitcoin network, they could cut $1 billion of cost and remittances every year to their people. They could put themselves on the world's first digital monetary network. And instead of their people losing 10 to 20% of their value a year and 10% when they move it, they're going to actually make money and they're going to be able to move that value around for free.
That's incredible.
I love Michael Saylor.
I do too. Yeah. So that was just kind of a warm up.
Yeah, well, we were talking before we came on air about good assets, bad assets, solid assets.
Michael Saylor's ahead of his time. It's just a matter of time until others wake up and realize, hey, why are we storing value in a unit of account that can just go to infinity, which it has? I mean, we just released a $1.2 trillion bill or budget or who knows what it is and all the pork.
Yeah, who knows what it is. That's
mind-boggling.
Good point.
Like, you know, guys, I'm baffled by this all. What is our national debt now? It's hard to keep up unless you look at it every day. Over, what is it, 34.5 or 30?
I have
just
no idea.
Crazy.
Yeah. Well, they just added $1.2 trillion to it.
Yeah, exactly. So Michael Saylor is way ahead of his time. Even if this doesn't happen in our lifetime, he realizes that this monetary unit is the best form of storing value in the history of mankind.
Well, he sure did take a huge risk by putting his company's treasury into it, and he walked the talk.
He absolutely did, and continues to do so. Didn't he just make a new purchase within the last week or
two?
He's issuing common stock and buying Bitcoin. And
he's
also doing that with his own personal reserves.
Right. I might also mention I do own MicroStrategy shares as well.
Full disclosure.
Full disclosure. Full disclosure. Thank you for that. Yeah. Appreciate that.
And I just think it's his understanding of property rights allows him to go so far ahead.
Right. Sorry, we didn't mean to step on you there, Elizabeth. You may want to repeat that.
Yeah, I was just saying that I think his understanding of property rights and their importance is what just allows him to be so bullish.
I agree. We have a little something about that coming up.
I was going to say, because if you really know about property rights, you know you really don't have your property.
Unless you own Bitcoin.
Touché.
And have it in your self-custody.
Yeah.
So you need to have your own storage. Well, the famous Lynn Alden.
Love her, too.
Okay. She was on a Charles Payne show on Fox Business just recently, about a week and a half ago, and had much to say about the economy. Now, this is about 4 minutes long, so we might take a break in the middle of it. And if anybody wishes to chime in.
I will before we start.
Yes,
I just have to say I'm really surprised that Charles Payne and them play so much about Bitcoin lately.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. Don't get me wrong. It's wonderful.
Right.
But they're one of the few, when you want to say mainstream media, that actually says something about Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like they have Natalie Brunell on there all the time, too.
Yeah,
she always knocks it out of the park.
I think Charles Payne has quite a bit of... he can stand on his own. He does not need Fox Business.
Right.
So Neil Cavuto seems to like him quite a bit. So and he's had some controversy that he's had no problem overcoming. In any case, that's a bit of a side note. So why don't we go ahead and play this?
Let's take a listen.
Yes.
This, folks, look at this. September 15, 2020 by MicroStrategy, basically making an informal Bitcoin ETF any stock fund manager or institution or rando investor can buy MSTR. For indirect Bitcoin exposure and yet remain within their mandate since ostensibly it's just a normal stock. Well, if you listen to that strategy, you'd be up more than 900% right now. Let's bring in Lynn Alden, investment strategy founder and author of the new book, Broken Money, Lynn Alden. Lynn, you know, I tell you, no wonder you got a fancy studio, but congratulations on the call. By the way, This all of a sudden, this massive, new exuberance for Bitcoin, particularly from areas of the investment world that were sort of just completely standoffish before. Is it net-net a good thing, or should we be concerned?
So I think it's a good thing overall. I think that as the Bitcoin network grows and reaches its total addressable market, it's inherently going to get institutional interest. I think we saw a little bit of kind of forward-thinking institutions in the prior cycle, but I think this cycle is the one for a larger, more normalization of institutions getting into the space. And, you know, back then there were very few vehicles for investors to express their bullish view on Bitcoin. Other than owning it directly, there are a lot of pools of capital that couldn't. And so GBTC as a trust or MicroStrategy as a stock were the main ways to access it, but now there's a variety of ETFs and other portals into the asset, and I think that's only going to grow long term.
No, the title of your latest newsletter is Economic Reacceleration.
Wouldn't you agree with that? And we had talked
100%.
in the last bull run is that what was missing was the institutional investors. I mean, there's been a few that jumped into the fray.
For
You've had insurance companies.
Yep.
A couple of big players, MicroStrategies, but this year with the ETFs, game changer.
What was so important was the change in accounting rules before.
Yes,
it was huge.
Yes.
Previously,
good point.
If a corporation owned Bitcoin and it went up, they were unable to show to their stockholders that they had done a brilliant thing and increased the value of the company. But the rules required if the value of Bitcoin went down, they were required to show the stockholders how horrible they had done and lost their money. That's changed now. Now it's fair now.
Yes, totally. Which it should be. Yes, you know.
Yeah, I just wanted to shout out the Broken Money. We were actually all pointing at each other, everybody who's read the book. It's an amazing book. I had the opportunity to actually get an autographed copy.
I remember you standing in line for
that. Yeah, I do.
I was the second one in line, but it wasn't due to me. It was my buddy, who was a huge fan, and he was number one in line. So,
what I'm hearing is
I kind of remember.
Yeah.
You remember that.
Laura
ditched us at the
I wanted to give a little background on Lynn Alden just personally. I used to follow her before she actually got into Bitcoin. Brilliant. Just brilliant. I was into gold big time, and she was huge into gold. But I mean, she's still into like a lot of commodity, like basically anything financial. She's a guru. So do a little bit of research. We're not just throwing people out there who on a whim or a willy nilly. Like, she's legit. Go research Lynn Alden. If you get the chance, read her book. A few of us in here have. It's amazing. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, she's not going to take you on for a ride.
I'm glad he mentioned something about that though, and mentioned gold, because there's a lot of people. I believe Michael Saylor's one. Lynn, there's a lot of them that started out with gold. Some of them still hold gold.
Lawrence Lepard.
Yeah, and say it's a good investment as well, but they've also
diversified.
Diversified into Bitcoin big time and becoming very big opponents in the Bitcoin world.
For sure.
Well, we're going to dive into some of the contents of her book, so we'll let Charles continue.
And you talk about this sort of tug of war between loose fiscal policy, tight monetary policy. Where are we right now with that? Of course, we got a major economic data point out again tomorrow. We just got the budget, $7.3 trillion. So the spending part is not going away. I don't know if Jay Powell took a shot after he saw that or not.
Yeah, I think long term, the fiscal deficit is pretty much baked into the cake. I mean, basically, regardless of election outcomes, regardless of other things, a lot of this is demographics driven. A lot of it is built up over a long period of time. And so that's kind of a constant multi-trillion dollar deficit, which is a background stimulus for certain parts of the economy that are receiving it. But it's also kind of structurally inflationary. And the tight monetary policy can restrict some areas of the economy, particularly the interest rate sensitive areas, you know, commercial real estate, all the usual names. But the problem is that when the public debt is so high relative to the size of the economy like it is right now, the higher interest rate also blows out the deficit significantly. And so the overall monetary policy becomes somewhat less effective at cooling down the economy or cooling down inflation than it would if there was a lower debt environment. And so one of the reasons I'm bullish on assets like Bitcoin or gold or, say, energy stocks, for example, is because I think we have this kind of structurally bullish backdrop for monetary inflation and for harder assets.
Huge.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and she just so eloquently just did not bash the economy. She just taken it matter of fact. This is what you're going to do to handle it.
Yeah, I 100% agree. I've been involved in debates about QE and QT. in various places. It's really hard to execute, these tightening policies when you have a government just going crazy spending. When you have, you know, we mentioned our national debt. This stuff leaks into the economy, folks. So in addition, that's where, you know, a positive expansion of money supply comes from. But you also have record credit card debt. You have auto loans. You have, she mentioned, commercial real estate. These are all ways that the money supply is expanding. And when you expand the money supply, it equates straight into price inflation. So, I mean, the Fed is somewhat backed into a corner, stuck between a rock and a hard place in a lot of these matters. And basically, Lynn's doing a great job defining all that in this chat.
Well, she mentions background stimulus. I look at that as a targeted stimulus, whereas when the economy was stimulated before, everybody participated in it to some extent.
Yeah.
There were still large players that got large portions of it, but this is very targeted.
Absolutely.
And the rest of us have been left out. We're paying the bill for it.
That, you nailed it. I was about to say, it's just basically creating a giant chasm between the haves and the have-nots. So I was watching a video today about the streets in the Bay Area in certain places, which for miles are tents and homelessness. It's like we're, I don't know, polarizing more with, you know, wealthy and not wealthy, and even polarizing with politics and, you know, ways people are thinking. It's not a good thing, really. And this monetary example is exactly the same. It's, you know, huge chasm between the haves and have-nots.
Now, what's happening is, you know, property rights are going out, totally going
gone
with it. If you saw, speaking of like San Francisco, where now they have squatter rights. So you don't even, you can own the property and you can't even have access to it really or anything. So my point is,
take over a year to get them out.
Yeah, if you can get them out then, but it's taking from us to give to them,
right.
And we don't have the property rights. You know, that's one thing our country was founded on was property.
Yep. Right.
If you don't have property, you don't have too much.
Right.
She finishes out the segment talking about intrusive government looking over our shoulders. So you want to listen to this part, too.
You know, I saw where you retweeted someone was reading a passage in your book, Broken Money, and it was really amazing because it talked about the Bank Secrecy Act, and of course that's when we started, this is 1970, by the way, and 10,000 became the threshold which banks had to notify the federal government. It wasn't adjusted for inflation. Same thing we saw with the alternative minimum tax, right? And, I mean, it's just nuts because it's just we have an intrusive government that's looking over our shoulders, and people are really concerned about that. Of course, now maybe it doesn't matter if you're going to look at $600 on transactions on also these payment services.
Yeah, so 50-plus years ago when that rule was put into place, $10,000 was more than, a family would spend on, a car, for example. That was worth over $80,000 in today's value. So that was a very rare type of transaction to surveil. But over time, like you said, because they did not adjust that for inflation, that shrunk over time. And if we go another 50 years without adjusting for inflation, that could be the equivalent of under $1,000 that has to be surveilled. And so generally speaking, the overall financial system has become very permissioned. It's become very surveilled. And then you can extrapolate that globally, right? There's 200 countries roughly. Many of them are even more tightly controlled than U.S. banking system. And so when you have an asset like Bitcoin that's a global asset, so people in all these different countries can access it, they can escape their debasement, they can escape their kind of bank controls, it's rational for people to do that, even when, they don't have to have any sort of nefarious reason for it. It's just in a lot of countries and a lot of jurisdictions, people want to own their own assets. And they want to have rule of law relative to their assets rather than things like arbitrary bank freezes or ubiquitous financial surveillance.
And, of course, there are countries like China that actually attach it to social scores, and that's taking it to an even deeper extreme. Lynn, congratulations.
That was about 2 minutes of
there's a lot there.
Major information.
I think that's my favorite part of the whole video, and the two words that really – I just want to highlight our global asset.
Right.
And that just reminds me of just how much hope that Bitcoin brings in.
For sure.
Yeah. And then she mentioned the Bank Secrecy Act and the alternative minimum tax, where at one point in time, the bank didn't peek in on what you were doing unless it was over $10,000. Now, I don't know if this passed, but I know it's part of an executive order or trying to be part of a package, and pardon me for not being specific on that, but it's $600. That I'm specific about.
For the year total.
Yes, for the year. Yeah. You are supposed to report it. Yes. That's crazy.
Insane.
Yeah. Yes. So
Like really putting the screws to you to watch what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And put AI on the job.
Right. Oh, yeah, they already got AI on the job on that one. You know, that's... Yeah.
Well, people want the rule of law rather than surveillance. Yeah. I mean, that's it, bottom line, I think.
Yeah. And Elizabeth made a good point about the global asset thing.
Yes.
This is the first time in history that this is something that affects the whole globe. It's not one continent.
One
it's
country.
Not two continents. Yeah, not one country. It's everything.
Well, it takes away the United States currency reserve hegemony.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you know the really great thing is by having a truly global asset, it kind of keeps every government in the world honest because the global asset is in the background.
Yep. Great points.
Can't manipulate it so easily.
Yeah, it's like we as a collective, like humans, we will be escaping debasement through Bitcoin if you guys don't get it together.
All right. And with that, I think we need to take a break.
Yeah, it's a good place to stop.
Yeah, we can stop there and we'll pick up this conversation on the other side. You're listening to Tokens Radio Show. This is KCNR, 1460 AM and 96.5 FM. We'll see you in about 3.
Survive without a strong central government to keep it alive. When I launched the central bank, Jefferson called me ill. Now you have my face to thank on every $10 bill. When America was cash strapped, I pushed past that. Now some sicko makes crypto our nation backtrack.
Decentralized currency, yes, I invented it. I'm sure many governments wish they had prevented it. The national cash is how they keep control. But freedom to the people was my ultimate goal. Am I a pseudonym, a group of men? It doesn't even matter.
Nope.
I invented...
Moment in History by KCNR Radio. In 1889, the Lady of Justice was placed on top of the dome of the Shasta County Courthouse. Later in 1959, the statue had lost her sword after high winds broke it from its hilt. The broken-off piece precariously perched on a platform surrounding the statue. Maintenance supervisor Lloyd Knox removed the sword so it wouldn't fall from the roof. The sword was repaired and returned later that year. By 1963, the statue was removed from the old courthouse by helicopter. It was then put in a brick monument on the courthouse lawn. Vandals started to attack the statue. Over the following years, the sword was stolen 3 times, the scales once. Someone tried to cut off the head with an axe. All the statue's fingers, except for the thumb on the left hand, were beaten away, and the back was so severely beaten it caused the pot iron she's made of to break away, creating a large hole in the center of her back. In 2008, it was removed for safekeeping and restoration to be placed in the new courthouse currently under construction.
This is Ted Leidy with Northern Firearms Instruction. Obtaining a California concealed weapons license will allow the licensed individual to transport a listed handgun in their vehicle or on their person in public. For application instructions, training, and other information, contact NFI at 530-999-1822 or visit us online at usgunpro.com. This is Ted Leidy, and remember, it's our right and our responsibility.
Experience luxurious bliss with Pinnacle Cultivators, Redding's premier licensed legacy cultivator exclusively at the Queen of Dragons in the city of Shasta Lake. Pinnacle's carefully crafted, expertly curated flower guarantees an exceptional experience with rare genetics and distinctive flavors, freshly packaged daily for a genuine farm-to-table experience. Visit 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard or call 530-276-9771 for delivery and hours of operation. Visit queenofdragons.com or follow us on X at the Queen Dragon.
On News Brief, I'm Phoebe Johnson, your host, here with the latest local updates. Tensions run high as the fate of District 1 Supervisor Kevin Cry hangs in the balance with voting procedures coming under fire in Shasta County. The tight race for the District 1 Supervisor recall in Shasta County has led to scrutiny of ballot processing procedures at the Shasta County Elections Office. Supervisor Patrick Jones expressed concern after witnessing what he believed to be errors during the 1% manual tally. However, Assistant Clerk and Registrar of Voters Joanna Francesca explained that the ballots were simply being moved to the correct bucket after verification by 2 people as required by law. Some observers, including a candidate from District 2, complained about the limited visibility and audibility during the counting process. Francisca clarified that this manual tally is not a recount and is governed by different laws. In other news, former Shasta County Sheriff Eric Magrini is embroiled in legal battles and controversy. Despite his employment as the Assistant County Executive Officer, Magrini has been absent from his duties, leaving crucial work unattended. Surprisingly, he has also become a licensed real estate agent while presumably collecting workers' compensation benefits, raising questions about his commitment and potential conflicts of interest. Magrini filed for a workers' compensation claim in March of 2023 for injuries sustained during his law enforcement career. Furthermore, a former Shasta County sheriff has filed a civil complaint against Magrini, alleging illegal actions during the CEO application process and retaliation against former Sergeant Patrick Poller. As this multifaceted story unfolds, the community eagerly awaits the resolution of these troubling developments. Meanwhile, whispers in the halls of Shasta County are growing louder as employees find their voice through the whistleblower hotline. Shasta County has seen an uptick in whistleblower calls from county employees since a presentation by Auditor-Controller Nolda Short 3 weeks ago. While details remain confidential, many complaints revolve around human resource issues. Supervisor Kevin Cry has also received more calls and directed them to the hotline. The hotline is exclusively for current county employees, but every complaint is logged and staff works to connect callers with the appropriate person or agency. The Auditor-Controller's office oversees the process, ensuring multiple eyes are on each problem. Confidentiality is maintained unless written permission is given or criminal charges are filed. Detailed information from the caller is crucial for a thorough investigation. Finally, a Redding landowner's battle against squatters and litter on his property takes a dramatic turn as he faces steep fines from the city, prompting a heated debate over responsibility and authority. Mike Thomason, a Fresno developer who owns a 160-acre property along Cascade Boulevard in Redding, finds himself at odds with city officials over the illegal camping and environmental damage occurring on his land. The property has been a long-standing nuisance to surrounding property owners. Despite Thomason's effort to secure the area, the situation has escalated, leading to a $1,000 fine and a potential $65,000 penalty if the land isn't cleaned up by April 19th. Thomason argues that he lacks the authority to make arrests and that fire mitigation measures have inadvertently made the property more accessible to trespassers. As tensions rise between Thomason and the city, the future of the land and the partnership between the two parties remains uncertain. Stay tuned as this story continues to unfold. Thank you for listening to your Town Hall Brief. Become part of the conversation at Shastlake Town Hall on Facebook or at Town Hall News on X, formerly Twitter.
Right, we are back.
Hello, everybody.
Yes. Yeah. That was quite a town hall brief.
It was.
Yeah. It was a goodie, the part I heard.
There is a lot of information packed in that. It's too bad we couldn't dissect that more on the show. We will on the when we do in the morning. But before we went to break, we were talking Lynn in regards to Lynn Alden and all of that. And she's great, too. There's a lot of information packed up in that. If you'd like to call in, the number here is 530-605-4567. And we'll
give us a call.
We like calls.
We do.
Well, with that, we are going to just move right along. I know there's several different areas we want to hit upon, and I think
we're going to go to this clip with Major Jason Lowry.
He
was talking about, this was a while back, and he's talking with some, it looks like probably some high-level people in the military. I wasn't able to see who was in the audience, but Major Mathematics up on the board. I couldn't even tell you what that is, engineering stuff. But in any case, he was talking about what Bitcoin did not do as our bankers and central banks did. So it's going to be kind of interesting to hear this. I'm going to play this right now.
All right.
Bitcoin didn't cause a bunch of bankers to do fractional reserve lending. I think we can all agree about that, right? Bitcoin didn't cause a bunch of bankers to take too much leverage. Bitcoin didn't cause bankers to debase savers and to destroy the purchasing power of the currency to bail out the bankers who are fractionally reserve lending and taking too much leverage. Okay? Bitcoin didn't kick entire sovereign nations off of an international payment system. Okay, so we have to keep that in mind, right? If you're an architect of a financial system, then it's your responsibility to not motivate people to leave that financial system, which means don't debase them. Don't continue bailing out the people who are making the mistakes. Don't kick entire sovereign nations off this thing. Like, it's your responsibility to not do that if you want to be maintaining, like, the dominant financial information network. Okay, don't blame Bitcoin for your... Ooh, I almost said something bad. Don't...
incompetence.
I'll just leave it at that. Okay. So, and by the way, if this is more than just a coin, right? If this is bit power, if we have no kidding, again, this is theory. I could be crazy. I'm relying on other people to evaluate. That's how computer science works. Computer theory works. If we have no kidding figured out a way to project power in from through cyberspace, a new physical power projection protocol that will transform cybersecurity and national security, then blaming Bitcoin to protect your failing hegemony, let's call it for what it is, okay, that's not going to help you. It's still going to break down. Like, your financial system is still going to collapse as long as you keep on doing the things that I just said, okay? What you would actually be doing is you would be forfeiting our access as a nation to this protocol, to bit power. Okay, you would be denying us access to this feature, and that would be a strategic nightmare.
That was huge.
There's a lot there, too.
Yeah.
I think maybe just a basic on fractional reserve lending.
Sure.
So back in the day, the good old days, a bank could only lend out dollar for dollar what it had deposited there. Then they changed the laws and said, okay, we're going to change it now. you can actually lend, you know, up to 50%. So in essence, what's going on when you're lending against money that you do not have deposited, you are actually, in a way, creating more money that didn't exist before. Even though it's in the form of debt, it's still expanding the money supply.
Not in a way.
Well, I know, but a layperson has a hard time wrapping their head around it. It took me a little while before I realized, hey, this is actually a form of inflation because we're inflating the supply of money. So you're 100% correct. Does anybody know currently what that fractional number is?
Nine.
Anybody? It's zero. Zero.
I was gonna say one.
It's zero. If a bank can lend against.
Yeah, misunderstood your question.
They could have no money and lend infinite money.
Oh, yeah.
Zero. I think it was during COVID times they actually lowered it. It used to be like 25.
Oh, zero, so
you had to have.
It was 0% to
borrow. Yeah, to borrow again. So you would have had to have in the past up to 25% reserves, in other words, deposits in your bank.
Right.
You could only lend against that up to, a certain percentage. Now they just pulled that off the table. So in essence, they're just printing money. Yeah, look that up, you guys. It's crazy. It blew my mind. I didn't believe it the first time. I had to look that up multiple times, looked up the date and everything else. I'm going to switch it back to Jason Lowry now. Jason Lowry is an MIT graduate, a member of the Space Force. I think the Space Force was signed into...
He was a Trump appointee.
Yeah, in 2018 with President Trump.
Yep.
Yeah. Do research on him too, folks. Don't just believe us. This dude is a genius. Go research Jason Lowry. The man is smart.
And you'll find many of his interviews on Robert Breedlove's What Is Money Channel on YouTube.
Yes.
They're brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he did, six or seven episodes with him? And
they go
they're
deep.
Two, 3 hours long.
Yeah, they go deep.
I've listened to every one
And you know he's over the target a lot of times because even like his book, they pulled his book and stuff. And
software.
So, he's kind of over the target on some of the stuff.
I don't know if they pulled his book, like, nobody is going to.
Well, there for a while.
But I think in the military.
If you want to buy his book right now, you'll probably have to pay $18,000 because they literally pulled the book.
They pulled the book.
Have to find a copy that somebody else bought.
It's
when
not
you
out
still,
to the public.
Right.
But I'm sure within
you can find
the
it
Pentagon
because
so
a certain
forth,
amount
available.
Were released.
Yeah, but when we bought our books, we just went to Amazon and went,
$40.
Yeah. And it came in the mail.
You own the software?
Yeah.
You own
yes.
I'll buy it from you.
Nope.
$100.
Not
new.
How much Bitcoin you got, baby?
I lost it all in a boating accident.
Well,
are we getting derailed?
I like that Jason just has such a good macro and technical overview that he provides, and he digs deeper. And even as we heard, they're wanting to get to the root to hold people accountable and just getting to the bottom of what happens when we bail bankers out.
For sure.
Yeah, the counterfeiters.
Well, yeah, it's
that's probably what it is.
Yeah, it's just another cog in the spokes that's derailing the whole system. There's just another one. Like,
that's right.
We have a plethora of them, and if it was just one of these things, we're still off the rails. So it's just exponentially getting more and more insane all the time. Hence, we're in the trillions of debt and whatnot. So it's going crazy.
I think that's why our lawmakers don't care.
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, when they're complaining about, hey, you know, why did the Republicans allow this? Oh, they want to shut down, and the Democrats, they want to fund more services, and it's I don't think it matters because they know this is such a broken system. It's faux money, and they're playing with monopoly money.
Yep.
That's really all it is.
Accounting and accountability.
And our taxes will go up more and more.
Yep.
But I think Elizabeth is, we're going to pivot a little bit, and we need to touch base on halving, because that's going to be probably less than about 2 to 3 weeks from now.
Somewhere right in around the 20th, right?
Correct.
That's what it's estimated right now. I know we've been touching on the halving almost every episode. So Bitcoin Magazine, they put out an article in the past few days and pretty much saying that the halving is set to create chaos or opportunity, or maybe even both, like never before. As it approaches in April, the combination of surging demand from ETF approvals and shrinking supply has created a unique opportunity for profit. And despite the price fluctuations, experts remain optimistic about Bitcoin's long-term growth. And I think as we saw with the unprecedented success of ETFs, now there's a raising concern if there's going to be sufficient supply to meet the demand, which may cause higher prices, and it may make it more difficult for average consumers to buy Bitcoin directly. So we are keeping an eye on that.
Gosh, if it gets more difficult to find, what would effect would that have on the price?
Right. Yeah. Yeah, this is a lot of people don't realize this is pretty much economics 101, supply and demand, right? And a lot of people are just saying, oh, you know, I have this model and I think this, and there's just a lot of theories. But when it all boils down to, hey, there's not a lot of Bitcoin left out there that are actually going to be up for sale, it's going to be a question of supply and demand. And like I mentioned before about GBTC, they probably are only going to bleed a couple hundred thousand more Bitcoin. 165,000 more will be minted this next year. And then you got 1.79 million on exchanges. And then, you know, barring a complete economic catastrophe in which would, you know, force sell so people could, you know, buy food and rent and whatnot, I really think that we're going to see an influx of money and the printer fire back on again. And I think this is really going to maybe hyperinflate this whole thing and cause the supply-demand shock to hit faster.
Well, it's like Lynn was saying, it's background stimulus. So
absolutely.
It is. We are getting the stimulus.
Yeah, for sure.
Did you have any more to add, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I feel like all of this is just further integrating Bitcoin into the global financial infrastructure due to its demand. And somebody else who agrees with me is Michael Saylor.
We have a clip about that, right?
I also agree.
Shall we listen?
Yeah, let's listen.
He had the straight.
I love Michael Saylor.
You know, what we've got is 900 Bitcoin a day. And around April 16th to April 18th of this year, we're going to go to 450 Bitcoin a day. This will be the halving, but it will be the single most consequential halving in the history of Bitcoin, because you're talking about, it's the equivalent of someone coming in the market saying, I'm going to buy $8.5 billion of Bitcoin a year for the next 4 years, guaranteed. That's the demand impact, right? $8.5 billion, $23 million a day at the current price. Now, that's a huge amount, but more importantly, that's a huge demand-supply shift in the year when the demand via the ETFs has jumped by a factor of 4 to 10 times the daily supply. So what you have is institutional capital entering, and then you have the supply getting cut in half. You know, what we've got is 900 Bitcoin a day, and around April 16th to April 18th of this year, we're going to go to 450 Bitcoin a day. This will be the halving, but it will be the single most...
I think that that looped, didn't it?
Yeah, it probably did.
Yeah.
So
that was huge. Like how he can just dumb it down for this normie here, so I can understand that $8.5 billion is guaranteed, baked into the cake. That's how much Bitcoin is going to be purchased just from the mining aspects of this.
And I think that will help a lot of people maybe understand Bitcoin and having a little bit more, because it's hard for them to wrap their head around, I think, sometimes that, you know, like gold and silver and other things, the supply is whatever.
Right.
There's an endless supply. And he put it very, very good in what he said, that how it's so limited.
Mm-hmm.
And you think it's limited now, it's even going to be more limited. So I think that might help people understand when we're saying, you know, there's only so much Bitcoin and it's important because of the halving and why you need to invest a little bit and like that.
For sure.
Because people can tell you all day. I get people in my office that go, oh, God, do I sell my silver now? It went up or it went down or, you know, Oh, I bought in here and I'm losing money.
You know,
that kind of helps you out that, yeah, it may go fluctuate a little bit, but you know that it's going to go up.
Right.
When it goes up, it's not going to come back down to where it was.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
No, I think a lot of people, and one of the terms that I heard in the Bitcoin magazine piece was cash out. And I kind of, that rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
Because what do you cash out into? To me, cashing out means I'm going to enhance my life or my family's life or, you know, something, some way like that. But cashing out isn't getting American dollars, you know. So I struggle with that. And also the point Michael Saylor really is making is trying to conceptualize for, you know, like you mentioned, the commoner, how this halving is impacting the supply. And I don't like the word mining even. It's like this is just it's a computer process.
Lauren, let me interrupt you.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
On the cash out to what thing, I've actually tried that on a lot of people, and nobody understands that U.S. dollars are melting ice cubes.
Yes, yes. Well, going back to when we keep inflating the supply of it, people don't realize they're being debased and they're being stolen from in the future, and their grandkids. Like, we used to hear stories about grandpa could buy a burger for 20 cents back in the day. Well, that's going to happen to future generations, but on steroids. Like, they're going to be paying $25 for a burger. And
it's already there.
Well, yeah, it's going to get worse and worse and worse.
Correction. So. It used to be a bag of burgers for $20.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't going to say anything. We don't know those things for sure.
Right.
But
yeah, they were $1.50 when you were younger.
My husband would talk about how they would get a bag of burgers from A&W.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah, that's
without
crazy.
A kid,
see,
right?
No offense.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm...
The
right
truth's
up there.
The truth. We don't care.
Okay.
But, yeah.
But anyway, we strayed a little bit. But, yeah, cashing out into something, it's hard because we've been programmed ever since we were born and raised in this society to think in terms of U.S. dollar, that U.S. dollar equaled value. Yeah. Time is money. Money is the U.S. dollar. This, you'd see a picture, and a little kid would even point at a penny and a dime and a dollar bill and think that's money. But when it's just going berserk crazy in the supply – It's killing us. So when you have a fixed supply of 21 million as a value keeper, it's a much more stable form of value storage.
Right, right. Well, it's not like somebody can go, you know what? You have too much value over there, so I'm going to start the printing press up again so I can make
it
go down.
Can't be stolen from.
Well, I think you're not going to hear much in conversation if you're going to want to trade something. And I don't really hear people saying, well, I'll take X amount of dollars for that.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, I'll take what you're offering me for something else that you have. They don't want the dollars.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right.
You have a cow?
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, do you have vegetables? Do you have...
True.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and you might be thinking, all this information on digital assets is great. But what if the government shuts Bitcoin down? You know, I get this question all the time.
Do you really?
I do.
Yeah, we hear that quite a bit.
So if you were to Google this, can Bitcoin be stopped? Here's what the response would be. Let me just save you that time and give you the answer. So it says, to even have a chance to stop Bitcoin, every government in the world would have to successfully coordinate simultaneously to shut down the entire internet everywhere and keep it off forever. And this is kind of like an improbable scenario. The Bitcoin network can be communicated over radio signals and mesh networks. So it's here to stay. Otherwise, no other systems can run.
Well, do you remember Michael Saylor? Go back a few weeks. He said, you know, I believe it was Michael Saylor said, you could shut down the internet and everything for 5 years, 10 years, a month, whatever it is. And no matter what the time frame is, you start it back up, and guess what? Your Bitcoin and everything's still there.
Right.
Nothing happened.
Yes.
That's right.
That's correct.
Except maybe you gained value.
Did you see the EU is talking about banning private wallet holders from transacting?
Anonymous wallets, yes.
Right, anonymous wallets. So a good analogy here in NorCal might be cultivating of marijuana, where, you know, the government came in at one point and said, and banned it too, and, you know, 10% complied. So this might be a scenario where there would be some people complying, people that wouldn't know their rights or would just bend the knee to the government.
That's
so you could probably assess that 10% of you know, holders would do that. But people in the know and people that are confident how this works would just say, nope, I'm still going to hold this. I'm still going to transact. And I'm not going to worry about – I mean, they can ban anything they want, and it's up to the people to decide if they're going to continue to do that or not. So if we continue to transact in Bitcoin, then they're going to – it's good luck. You're going to be playing the craziest game of whack-a-mole known to man, because this is a worldwide phenomenon like we've mentioned before.
All right. I guess next.
Well, you had mentioned something about real estate, and here's a post by Dr. Jeff Ross.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Love that guy.
Yeah.
You don't actually own your house or your land. I mean, we've talked about this, and people don't realize it, that you're actually, like, renting it from the government. They think, oh, yeah, it's all good. You know, I have my property, I have my house. What can they do? Just try not paying your taxes. Even here in little Shasta County, see what happens, you know.
That's what the president of China said when he had a conversation with one of our leaders. So he, because they don't have property taxes there. So he said, oh, so you don't really own your real estate. You lease it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So, but you don't do that with Bitcoin.
No.
Right.
You actually own it.
As long as you have it in custody.
Cold storage.
Cold storage.
As long as you have good hygiene with your your Bitcoin.
Yep.
Yes, and you don't have to rely on anybody. It's all decentralized and everything. It's not like you got to go ask permission. Oh, please, you know, almighty. So
almighty
can actually...
Biden.
You can't quite pay property taxes on it.
Right.
It has no domiciled county, city, or anything like that. I'm sure our lawmakers will try to come up with something creative to make that happen, but it'd be
virtually
impossible to find out.
Right.
And you can pass it on to your kids, your grandkids, whoever. I mean, if you stop and think about it like property, it can get a little touchy when you pass. We've talked about it in the rearview mirror.
Right.
You know, what happens when I'm not here any longer? You know, and the kids don't know about a trust or whatever, at least Bitcoin. All they got to know is where to get the information to retrieve it, but they don't have to go through a bunch of hoops and hollers and
24 words. It's free speech. As long as we have the freedom to speak 24 words to our offspring, we're good.
You know, there was a guy who followed up to Dr. Ross's post, and he said that he recently met a guy who sold his real estate portfolio of 500 homes to buy Bitcoin, and that was 4 years ago. And he tells his real estate friends who are still in the real estate business, and Peter, I think this goes to your point, we were talking offline about that, that he has never been called by Bitcoin about a tenant problem, and that he can sell it to anyone in the world 24/7, 365 without a third party involved, which is what you were just saying.
And we'll go back to, and you don't have to worry about squatters.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. There's no squatter right
there. That's true. Yes.
Yeah.
Bringing it on back.
Yeah, did you see where that one guy, he took a chainsaw to the front door for the squatters anyhow. Move on. He took a chainsaw. By golly, I'll fix you.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about that. Right?
Yeah, exactly.
No chainsaws.
One guy got in trouble for turning off the Wi-Fi to the squatters.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, I've had that happen. True story. Electricity. Yeah, I have to tell you sometime.
Oh,
right.
Boy.
Yeah, you can get in trouble with water. Every bit of the services to the house.
Oh, yeah. This was in Missouri, and because we shut it off, they were going to come and do something to us, even though they were there illegally.
Right. Well, we're getting close to the end of the show. Just want to let everybody know that next weekend we're going to take a break for Easter to celebrate
Easter,
with our families.
Yeah, happy
and happy Easter. And Peter, thank you for being here. And
thank you,
perhaps
Peter.
We'll see you in a couple weeks.
You will. It's such a joy to be here. Thank you for having
you.
Me.
You bet.
Don't eat too much candy, everybody.
Ben, we thank you for producing today and wish you a happy Easter as well. And
thanks, Ben. Happy Easter.
Yes.
All right. And with that, I think we will see everybody in 2 weeks.
Yep. On April 7th, we'll have a special guest here that day.
Yes, we will.
Yeah, Mr. Jesse Parsons. He's been here before. We're excited to have him back on the show. Very knowledgeable in Bitcoin.
Yeah. Until next time.
Take care, everybody.
Now climb aboard, y'all. This train is bound for glory. And there's plenty of room for all. Well, Satoshi Nakamoto, that's a name I love to say. And we don't know much about him, but he came to save the day. When he wrote about the way things are and the way things ought to be, he gave us all a protocol this world had never seen. Oh, Bitcoin, as you're going into the old blockchain. Oh, Bitcoin, I know you're going to rain. Till everybody knows, till everybody knows your name. about traders trading altar coins and miners mining blocks. But them good old boys back in Illinois and on down to Tennessee.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.